Welcome to the Frank Reactions podcast on customer experience, the show where we bring you practical ideas from industry leaders to help your organization survive and thrive in this era of people shock. People shock is a time that we're living in now when robots and artificial intelligence can really help your business succeed, but only if you get the shrinking amount that's left for human contact right. What we explore in this show every 2 weeks is how you can create those great customer experiences that leverage the best of both people and technology. My name is Tema Frank, and this is episode 122. Now, I always choose people to interview who I think have something interesting to say about one or more of the three P's of profit, that's promise, people, and process. But sometimes I'm drawn to my guests not just for that, but because they're such interesting or unusual people. And today's guest is one of those. Glenice Harvey is the owner of A&H Steel, which manufactures rebar for industrial construction sites. But with her spiky blonde hair and fashionable clothes, she's not quite what you'd imagine when you think of someone who owns a steel company. I got even more curious about Glenice when I went to an art show opening at a not-for-profit art gallery she owns called Dandelions. And then when I learned that she'd spent nearly 3 decades as a grade 2 teacher before going into the steel business, I knew I absolutely had to interview her. Before we get there, though, I just want to give you a heads up about Pod Summit, which is Western Canada's podcast conference, and it's happening in Edmonton, Alberta on May 5th. It actually kind of drives me crazy that I'll be out of town that week, so I have to miss it. But if you want to learn more about podcasting, you really should sign up right away. If you've got a podcast, you'll learn how to make it sound amazing, how to grow your audience, and create a show that your listeners are going to love. If you don't have a podcast, you'll learn how to start one, and you'll be welcomed into what's a really warm podcasting community. Tickets for the event are just $150, and they are limited, so don't delay. You can get yours at podsummit.com. If you've been listening to the Frank Reactions podcast on customer experience over the past few weeks, you know that we're now a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. It makes me even more proud to know that the Alberta Podcast Network is sponsoring this year's Pod Summit. Now, on to the interview.
My name is Glenice Harvey, and I am owner of A&H Steel. I also am the owner of a not-for-profit art gallery called Dandelions Art Gallery.
Which is a very cool space. I've been there. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So tell me how you ended up in the steel business.
Okay. So back in 1970, my stepfather founded the company called A&H, and it was Andy and Hank. It was Andy and his brother. Andy was my stepdad. And within about a year, Hank decided to open up his own operation. And so Andy was looking for another partner. My mother was working as a detailer. That's someone who looks at drawings and creates the drawings for the reinforcing steel that goes into a building. Very unusual career for a woman, but she kind of landed in it when she was a receptionist at another reinforcing steel detailing company, and they said, "You've got potential," and they trained her up. So she was working for Andy, and he said, "I need a partner, and I think that you could bring something to this that would be interesting and help me be successful."
Wow, that was pretty progressive of him.
Mm-hmm.
So what year would that have been?
That was about 1971.
Okay, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had one son, and I'm an only daughter. So in 2006, Andy and Mom decided to do a freeze and restructure and made Craig and I the owners of the company. However, I had chosen a different career path, even though my mom wanted me to be a detailer, and I did work in the company. I worked as a receptionist, and I did try detailing. Didn't go very well, and I followed.
Why didn't it go very well?
Because I just didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the culture.
Okay.
It was a little bit rough and tough. So I decided to follow my my heart, and I went into education.
Okay.
So became an elementary school teacher, mm-hmm. and taught grade 2 most of my career, mm-hmm. and retired after 28 years in 2016.
Okay.
In probably about 4 years before that, I decided to take a bit of a bigger role in the company and help Craig with the leadership. We were going through some transformation, and so I thought it wasn't...
What brought that on?
Our general manager at the time was talking about retiring.
Okay.
And we didn't have any succession plan. Mm. And there were a few other things that were going on that I didn't think it was fair that Craig should be dealing with it all on
right.
his own.
Okay.
So I stepped in to support him and help him, and then got more and more involved to the point where I needed to take a leave from teaching. So I did that in 2015 in September with the intention of being back in December. Mm-hmm. December, I had to tell them that I wouldn't be back till April, and then in April I said I would be retiring the following year. So now it's been 2 years full time. So Craig's portfolio is largely operational and mine is mostly HR, and I deal with the people part of the business.
I mean, this intrigues me, and part of what intrigued me from the time I met you was these two aspects to your personality. So here you are in this very macho kind of business, and yet you've got an art gallery, and you were an elementary school teacher, and you're very fashionable. It's like, it's fascinating to me how all that fits together. I'm curious about how those different aspects of your personality affect the work you do and affect the organization.
When I moved into A&H slowly, I had to learn myself up really quick in leadership, and I had a business coach, and I dress very feminine, mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. And she said, you know, you might want to tone that down a little bit. I was like, okay. So, you know, I tried to match a little bit more to my environment. It was like, but I can't. This is who I am.
You.
Yeah. And I think I do bring something to just the feminine energy is so important. It's so important to be side by side, shoulder to shoulder with the masculine energy. Mm-hmm. And it's true in that industry. There just isn't a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, my mother set a wonderful example for being the feminine energy in a masculine world. Mm-hmm. Right from the beginning, it was really important to her that people be taken care of. And she said to Andy, we will share all our profits with our people. And I won't become your business partner unless you say yes to that.
Okay.
And that has been something that we've done ever since. And it is that feminine energy that, not to say that a man doesn't care, right? Andy cared very much about his people as well, but it's sometimes the woman who has that nurturing quality, right? Mm-hmm. So coming from education into the business world, into construction, it was sometimes really... It was to hear how people would talk to each other about each other. It's a world where you got to get stuff done, and it doesn't matter how. And I just kept saying there has to be a different way, mm-hmm. not a better way, just a different way, mm-hmm. just a different way of being mm-hmm. with one another. So I really went after culture. And okay. saying that, oh, I spent all my life telling little people how to be nice to one another. That's all it was.
Right.
Right? How to just be kind and gentle and respectful and help them solve their problems in ways that, and then you go into the grown-up world and it's like you just want to do more of that and say, you know, it's okay to be kind and gentle. not that they weren't. I mean, our company is filled with great people, but it's the industry itself.
Yeah.
you know, they're working all on the same project, but you'd never know it sometimes because there's a lot of blame and shame and finger pointing when something goes wrong. And it's, I think it's almost natural because, I don't know. Here's where I'm a little bit gapped. I don't really know what to say, Tema, why it is the way it is. And there is a movement. I believe it's been around for quite a number of years in the States called IPD, Integrated Project Delivery, mm-hmm. that is far more collaborative.
Tell me more about that.
Well, it's a completely different way of contractors and subcontractors working together.
Okay.
So when they get a project, before the project begins, all the subcontractors are called in to have conversation with the general contractor, and it's the way they do, it's a different bidding process and everything. It's like, this is what they're going to do the project for, and on time and on budget is everyone's responsibility.
Hmm.
And so there's far more collaboration, and right. they all own the project.
Interesting.
So when something goes wrong, it doesn't matter whether it's your department or not.
Right.
It's like you're all putting your heads together to figure out how to solve that problem.
Right. And
so there have been a few projects here in Edmonton that have been done using the IPD methodology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Women tend to be, that's how we are. We're
right.
collaborative. We like yeah. to, it's, I don't have all the answers. We have the answers. We can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what IPD is about. So
that's exciting.
It is exciting.
So how did you develop the credibility that people would take you seriously? I mean, I know that sounds odd, but
no.
you, as you say, you were dressing in a feminine way. You were an elementary school teacher, like, and then you're going and trying to boss around these big burly guys. Like, how does that work? How did you get buy-in?
That was, and maybe still is, pretty tough.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, I never heard it with my own ears, but I'm sure there was a lot of chatter behind my back about what does she know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She knows nothing about business. She knows nothing about rebar.
Right.
What is she doing stepping in here and telling us how to do things?
How did you even have the confidence to do that?
I don't know where that came from. Honestly, there was a lot of, lots of fear, lots of crying, lots of questions, self-doubt.
Yeah.
Tons of self-doubt. I read a book by Richard Barrett called The Values-Driven Organization.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the first opening pages of this book, I went, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I want. And that became my North Star. But even just talking it back at that time, we had a great company. There was, I would never say there was anything bad with it,
mm-hmm.
bad or wrong, but it's Jim Collins, good to great.
Yeah.
We're good. How can we make this great?
Mm-hmm.
How about if we try this? How about if we go in this direction? And to me, it's your company is just people.
Yeah.
And what I loved about Richard Barrett was he took Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. and he created a slightly different model, and it's really about taking care of people's, ensuring their basic needs are met, mm-hmm. and then you can do remarkable things.
Mm-hmm. So in practical terms, what did that mean? What did you change in the organization?
Well, I did it with the help of some consultants that I brought in. One was Vic Mirage, Unstoppable Conversations, who came in and helped us create a different kind of conversation based on what became our values, which are integrity, responsibility, authenticity, and we're up for something bigger than ourselves. And then I added a fifth one, which is we have fun. And so we worked with Vic. We developed created our values, and we also created our purpose statement, which was a little bit longer than it is today. It was recently revised in December, and it's simply, at A&H still, we elevate people.
Okay.
So I also hired Bea Bohmeyer,
mm-hmm.
of Bohmeyer Group, because she has a way of making the invisible visible,
mm-hmm.
through her survey called the CQ5, which is a culture quotient 5, measures 5 drivers of how you're leading culture in your organization. So every 4 months, all of our staff, So it's interesting because we have office and we have a fabrication shop.
Right.
And then we have field employees that are out installing the rebar. So we kind of have it siloed.
Right.
So we've been working on that, how to bring people together
so
and create
a
relationship. Well, we do fun stuff. Okay. One of the things that it was actually our field supervisor came up with the idea of having, he called it bridging the gap. So we take a couple people from the office and a couple people from the shop every month, and we go out and visit a job site.
Nice.
And we learn about what they're doing, and it's just so great for people to see how it flows, because that's, you were asking about customers. It's like that, those people are sort of our internal customers. We
Absolutely.
Have to make sure that the product is right for them to install. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we go for lunch. Mm-hmm. And the rule is you can't sit next to somebody that you work with on a daily basis.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to help to build relationship, and been very powerful for particularly our drafting, our detailing department, and our field guys, because how things are done in the drafting department really can impact the installers. So now they have a relationship, and so when there's an error or a problem out in the field, we've got our field guys calling up, and they're having a different kind of conversation than they used to.
And so it's not about blame now.
No.
Yeah.
A beautiful story that I love to tell. One of our other field supervisors that works in the office, so he's a field guy, mm-hmm. worked his entire life out placing rebar. We brought him in to help organize and decide where the men go on the job sites and that kind of. So now he has an office job.
Right.
It's a little bit of culture shock
yes.
there for him.
Yeah.
But one day there was an error, and he went up to the second floor and found the detailer who was working on the job, and he said, "Let's go into the boardroom and have a conversation." He says, "There's a problem. How can I help you solve this?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like. It was, when I heard that story,
yeah.
it was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what I've been dreaming of.
Yes.
Everyone owning the problem and being the solution to it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that makes so much sense that people from these different silos should see what the others do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is hard to have an appreciation of it if it's just theory. Now, in a lot of the, as it's interesting, on this show, we've interviewed Vic and Bea, so I'll put
okay.
links to those in the show notes. But what I have heard in most organizations that I've spoken to where there's been a culture transformation, and years you're saying it's not like you were bad and went to good, it's you were good already
mm-hmm.
and made it great. But often there's been a requirement to urge some people or help them leave the organization and find a better fit. Did you have to go through any of that?
We didn't actually let anyone go.
Okay.
There were some that found it challenging to accept the different way of doing things and the different kinds of conversations that we were having. And I'm not saying that they left for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
They had other reasons, you know, family, they wanted to, you know, try something different, and they moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. As I say, I don't want to say it was because of what we were doing, but it may have been a little bit of, caused a little discomfort.
Yeah.
Right? Especially when it came to authenticity and having authentic conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Owning it yourself, like looking at yourself first is probably one of the most challenging things that Vic has us do. It's not an easy thing to take yourself on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's true leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter where you are in the organization, you are a leader. How you lead yourself is important. And looking at yourself first instead of, you know, saying that the problem is over there. I do one-on-ones with all the office staff every month. I sit for an hour and have conversation with them. And recently I was having conversation with our OH&S coordinator, and
OH&S is
occupational health and safety.
Yeah.
And this gentleman said, "Well, I don't think our communication internally is really good. You know, like they're working on that in terms of saying, you know, our values actually I changed the wording around, but one of them is I say it, I mean it. That's mm-hmm. our integrity. Mm-hmm. So when you tell somebody you're going to do something in our organization, now you have to give a by when. It's really upping that level of integrity and people getting things done and being mindful of that. Mm-hmm. So he said, yeah, I think our communication is just getting, it's really good. But he says, it's our external, the people outside that we have conversation with that, you know, they don't follow through. Mm-hmm. They don't respond to email. They don't respond to phone calls. And he says, that's where I'm really struggling. And he said, made some comment like, you know, they're just not like us. So it was kind of in that moment that it was like, okay, there's things are shifting and people are
identifying that they are different
and that we've got a culture. Yeah. Yeah.
That's an interesting point about, particularly in your industry, because there's so much collaboration with other companies that has to work. And that's why this new model you were talking about sounds brilliant. Mm-hmm. But I guess, I mean, I come at things from a customer experience perspective. So essentially kind of what you're dealing with, in some cases, you're their customer or they're your customer, but how do you interact and get others to a higher level is tough.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that they are using, people are using, I was talking to someone in accounts receivable and she's using the by when, you know, when she's communicating, I expect to hear from you mm-hmm. by this date, by this time.
Yeah.
And if I don't hear from you, I will be in touch.
Yeah.
Not that that's new or a remarkable kind of concept, but mm-hmm. she says it's really helped. Mm-hmm.
In the process, like, who are your customers, external customers?
The general contractors.
Okay, right, because you're providing a service that they're hiring you to do.
Yep. So we're one of the first sub-trades that's on site.
Okay.
They do the excavation and, you know, get things formed up, and we do come in, do our, we're first ones in, first ones out, last ones to get paid. And that's just because of holdback, but yeah, it's really,
Okay. Yeah. How many staff do you have?
Right now we have about almost 100.
Okay.
Yeah, we have about 30 in the office, about 20 in the shop, in the fabrication shop, and then the remainder are out in the field.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the differences that you see for each of those three areas in terms of the culture and the human interaction that happens?
Well, they're all very different.
Yes.
Really different. And we go back to what are we doing to break down the silos. Yeah. We have a not full-time, but we have someone on staff that cooks. And so last week, for example, we had all the field and the shop guys in for pancake breakfast. We do that twice a year. And it's great because that brings them together to be able to have conversation with each other.
Yeah.
In terms of the culture of each, it is. I mean, you've got your office culture.
Yeah.
Then you've got the guys that are out there that doing really hard work. Cutting and bending steel is not an easy job. Mm-hmm. And then the field, same thing. Mm-hmm. But I think some of these softer things that we're doing and having more events where we bring them together, mm-hmm. helping them to see that we're all one team and one family.
Hmm. In your line of work, are most of the projects, do you get them through a bidding process?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I've heard from people is, well, it, you know, it doesn't even matter that much what our service is like. It's all about having the lowest bid. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction to that?
I think I speak for everyone at A&H when I say that's not how we look at it.
Okay.
Yes, it is that way. Mm-hmm. Lowest bid is what gets the job. But if you're known to be a quality company to work with, mm-hmm. then if there's any, you know, where it's close,
right,
then, generally speaking, you know, we're fortunate enough to get the work.
Right.
Things have changed considerably in the last 2 years.
Because of the economic slowdown here. So tell me about that. In what way? What impact does that have?
Had a huge impact on us. Now it really is, even if it's a penny, it's the lowest bid. And there's not a lot of that conversation in, they're close. They might talk to the owner and say, would you be willing, this price is just a little bit more, but we know that when we work with these people, they follow through, they get the job done, and there's higher quality. But yeah, the economy, and now there's just more competition because things have really, not just slowed down, they stopped up north, and that's where we were doing a lot of work. We were specialized in that heavy industrial market.
So if you were to be offering some advice to somebody else who was stepping into an organization that needed some change in terms of culture, what would you advise them?
My first reaction is run.
Yes.
No. For me, it's like really, really believing in what it is that you're doing and what you want to create. Okay. The stand that you are, because it's not easy. And identifying your purpose and your values and everyone owning that. Mm-hmm. If you can create that, particularly at the top, because the kids are watching, and then you cascade it down. I for me, that was the one thing that kept me going, and having a coach.
Okay.
Yeah, I have. Vic coaches me, and when things get tough, I call him up right away, and the first place that he makes me look is at myself and who I'm being, which. Sometimes, I say nasty things to him. I think anyone in a position of leadership needs to have a coach. Know your purpose, know your values, and have someone that's there. And not, yes, friends, definitely. I have a wonderful supports all around me. Women's President's Organization, McKay CEO Forum, my own friends and family. Having that one person that when you fall, and Brené Brown talks about it, face down in the arena, your friends will bring you, a blanket and water and wine, whatever, chocolate, make you feel good. Your coach is going to pick you up, dust you off, and throw you back in the saddle.
Yeah, so you need a coach who challenges you a little, pushes you a little.
Yes.
Yeah, whereas friends are more likely to be comforting. But not necessarily forcing you to confront difficult questions.
Especially the ones about yourself and who you're being as a leader. Who you're being as a leader that has you have all of this occurring around you. It's like, it's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, because it wouldn't always necessarily be you that's at the root.
No, but always look there first.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing this. When I talk to people, I've always talked about what I call the 3 P's of profit, being the promise, the people, and the process. And they all need to intertwine. And, you and I haven't talked much today about the process, but the promise and the people part are so, so crucial. And, the promise, what I call that, is what you're calling the values. So you need that at the core, and people who will live that.
Yeah. It's your North Star.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you.
We all know that silos simply have to be broken down to deliver consistently great customer experiences. And I really loved some of the things that A&H Steel is doing to help their 3 really distinct types of workers get to know and understand each other's needs better. It's something that I really recommend that every organization try to make time to do. It's also inspiring to see that even in what we think of as a pretty macho kind of business, there are companies that have opened their doors to a kinder, gentler, team-based approach. I'll have links in the show notes so that you can learn more about integrated project delivery, or IPD, because that sounds like a pretty exciting approach to shake up an industry that, in some ways, I think has really needed a shake up. This episode was so perfectly timed for the month of March because the March episode of the Edmonton Community Foundation's Well Endowed podcast was focused on women breaking down career barriers. And in case you're wondering about the name of that podcast, it's because the Edmonton Community Foundation helps people create endowments that support local not-for-profits. I was surprised to learn that you don't have to be super rich to start an endowment fund. You can actually start with only $10,000. So when your company's amazing customer service has started making good profits for you, you might want to get in touch with the Edmonton Community Foundation. That's all I've got for you for now. I will chat with you again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, I, as always, would love to hear your thoughts on the show, your feedback, your ideas for who I should talk to, and you can get in touch with me by emailing Tema, T-E-M as in marketing, A, so Tema, at frankreactions.com, or on Twitter, simply at Tema Frank, or on LinkedIn, or on the Facebook Frank Reactions page. Send me a note. Let me know what you think. Bye for now.